live from Atlanta, Georgia. It's the Zach Ballinger Show, where we help you find your direction through passion and purpose. My name is Zach Ballinger. I am your host. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Two ways you can join the show. We are streaming live via YouTube. So if you have any questions out there for me and my guests, pop them into the comment box. We'll make sure to get to them. Always, you guys know this, we're doing the Career Library. Email Zach at ZachBallinger.com with any questions, and we will get them to you. Without further ado, Lori, thank you so much for being a part of the Career Library.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Lori, you're a psychotherapist. Tell us a little bit about this career. How did you get started, and what do you actually do?
Well, it's been a journey, I'll tell you that. I had no intentions of going to school and having a career in a business and a company of my own. It was a life-changing event that took place. Unfortunately, I had a son that passed away of cancer. And so his death, it inspired me to help other families. I was never a good student in school. I barely graduated high school because I was undiagnosed with ADHD, and I'm sure I have a learning disability as well. But I was able to compensate through my adult life and as far as other than academics. And then after my son passed away, the cross-country coach from the local junior college asked me to run, and I decided to do that. I was scared because, of course, I didn't know how to study. But what I did was I applied my skills for training for athletic events, and I used that in college. And I was able to become the cross-country team captain, graduated valedictorian of my junior college, went on to UCLA, got, you know, a master's degree in counseling, then became a licensed therapist, then went back and got another degree, have my own company, and helping hundreds of families along the way.
Wow. Incredible. Thank you for sharing those personal details of your journey. What does a psychotherapist do? So let's say a high school student's out there listening. They're like, Zach, what in the world is a psychotherapist?
So what is there's so psychotherapy started with Freud, and which is a long time ago. And that type of therapy, I think, was kind of the stigma around therapy. Like there was only that one type of therapy where you would sit, lay on the couch, and a therapist would listen to your problems and just kind of make notes and nod their head. That's not what I do. Now there's different modalities of therapy. And the modalities that I've chosen are cognitive behavioral therapy and behavioral therapy, because they're very solution focused. It depends on what you want to do. What is your, I don't want to say your calling, but what are you interested in? For me, thoughts create emotions. Our emotions are exhibited through our behavior. That behavior can be damaging to ourselves, to our family. It can be maladaptive. So when people come to see me, they want to change a behavior. So it starts with the thought, you know, how do we change those negative, irrational thoughts? Well, we work on that together as a team. I write a treatment plan. And then I also use behavior therapy, because behavior therapy, how do we change our environment to change our behavior? The two work so well together. You have the thought process, which is so important because it creates those emotions. And then you have your environment. How is your environment contributing to that negative behavior?
Nice. So, you know, just to give it play an example, let's say somebody had anger management issue problems, you know, their behavior, they're always angry or they have a temper. So they come see you and you help them to try to go through that behavioral change. Is that a pretty fair assessment?
Yes. So typically when, you know, when somebody's younger and they have an anger problem, they're called tantrums. When somebody is older and they're exhibiting that behavior because they never learned how to gauge their emotions and how to have a replacement behavior, a calming strategy, any techniques. So when they come to me and they're an adult, it's usually, typically, it's not the individual themselves, but the people around them that their behavior has affected. So that could mean that they are arrested, possibly, because, you know, when an adult has an outburst, it's really scary out in the community, or if somebody will see something or the police are called. So that's typically what happens with anger. Or if you're in a relationship, they say, you either get help or I'm leaving you. The good thing is that there's a very high probability of helping the individual, even though they may not have come in on their own, but because it is, it's harming other people around them. So that's the good news. And yes, I do work with individuals with anger issues.
Gotcha. What do you love about your job? What are you passionate about?
Here's an example. I'll give you an example. Unfortunately, I had to go to a memorial on Saturday. It was a sad memorial. The individual was only 37 years old. But somebody came up to me, and they were probably in their 30s. And he said, Lori, you probably don't remember me, but 16 years ago, you came to my house. My sister has a developmental disability. And I just want to let you know how much you changed our lives and how much you helped our family. There you go, right? I mean, Zach, that's what it's all about. It's all about, for me anyway, it's all about helping families, helping individuals. And I don't know, it's a hard job. I'm not gonna say it's not hard. And also to separate, when you're a therapist, it's really hard to separate your clients from your personal life. And that's why I've always stayed active in sports, I think, because sports is kind of my therapeutic release, if you will. And I always sign up for different events. Supposedly early February, I'm supposed to be hiking Patagonia Mountain in Argentina. So I hope that happens, but I have to make time for myself. If I don't make time for myself, I'm not going to do anybody any good.
Well, I'll have to talk to you after the show. That's something I'd be interested in. Maybe you can pack me in your suitcase. So you kind of touched on it a little bit. You said that this is not an easy job. And so on the flip side, I always ask people what they're passionate about. But at the same time, what is difficult? What do students, professionals need to know that's hard about this job?
I think it's early on. It's a little easier now, although I still kind of still affects me in some way, is that you can't help everybody because they're just not ready yet. So you could write the best plan in the world and you know that it's going to work, but the person is not ready. They're not in a place and they may blame you. They may say, this is your fault. You're not making yourself available. This doesn't work. Look what you're doing. So you have to step back and say, okay, they're deflecting because they're not ready. So what I say to them is, you know, I can give you the number of somebody else, make a referral, or if you want to come back and see me in the future when you're ready, that's fine. A lot of times, if a client isn't making progress with me, I don't want to see them anymore because I could keep making money like a cash cow, right? I'm not going to do that. That's not what it's about for me. I have too many people that I want to help. So if you're not ready yet, that's what I'll tell them. You know, you're just not ready. We're not making progress. Why don't we take a break and then call me in 6 months, a year, or whenever you think you're going to be ready.
It's a great answer. It's almost like, you know, me going to a personal trainer, they giving me a diet plan and then I show up and I'm not losing weight, but I'm working hard in the gym. They're like, well, Zach, if you quit eating these Chips Ahoy every night, first start. So you're exactly right. I think, even for career coaches, it's a hard thing because not everybody's ready to see a career coach because you have to do action on the client's part. So I like your answer to that. So let's say I always encourage my audience, whether they're professionals or students, to do preceptorships. And what's made it difficult in this time is it's hard to get a preceptorship because of the pandemic going around. So let's say we're going to do a virtual preceptorship with Lori. We're going to show up with her in the morning and we're going to finish with her at night. Can you walk us through your day? I know every day is not typical, but what does it look like for somebody out there that might be interested in this career?
Well, one thing you really have to remember in this career is what I described to you, that gentleman coming up to me and thanking me, that is a rarity. What typically happens is that there's somebody in crisis all the time. Remember, that's why they're calling me. They're in crisis. So it's a lot of 911 situations, you know, they need help now, and typically they do need help now. They might be exhibiting self-injurious behavior, so anxiety ridden that they're not maybe able to even leave their house to get formula for their baby. I mean, things like that, as simple as that. So it's a high pressure, high anxiety job. So you have to always be ready to stay calm and put out a fire. My day starts really early because I'm an early morning person. So I'm up answering emails. I get up about 4:30 in the morning and answer emails. And then I have to go for my morning run in the morning, come back, and then just get ready. My day is packed. And that's why I have to take time for myself. And I, you know, make myself go on backpacking trips or whatever it is that I need for myself, some alone time. You're always going to be putting out a fire.
Yeah, I can imagine. Definitely in your profession, absolutely. I'm sure it's a 9/11 emergency every day. Now, let's talk about something little neat, the neat exercise. We take you into a time machine. We rewind the time clock. We put you in third or fourth or fifth grade. What did Lori dream about being when she was a student?
Oh my gosh. My mom left our family when I was young. So grade school was difficult for me. My mom was an alcoholic and a drug addict. So going to school for me, I was shy. Like I said, I probably had a learning disability. I didn't feel smart at all, but I was still good at sports. So even from a young age, so I think looking back, I had an older brother. So I was a tomboy because I always wanted to play with all the kids in the neighborhood. So I think in grade school, it was not academics. It was how do I not draw attention to myself so the teacher doesn't call on me? So she can't look at my paper because my writing is so messy and I don't understand the math. So that part was horrible for me. But when recess came or lunchtime came, I was out on the playground. I was getting picked on the boys' teams all the time because I was a good athlete. So that's where I had the confidence.
Nice. And, you know, a lot of that spilled over today in what you do as far as, like you said, for the training and the marathons and stuff. So I think the reason I ask that question is oftentimes people don't know what they're good at or what they want to do, but sometimes it's in the mirror the whole time. And it's just, we've got to extract different things from that. So thank you for answering that. So the question that was asked by one of my students, I wrote down to make sure to ask you, because I do think it's important. They want to know what education level to be a psychotherapist. What do you have to, it says, what do I need to major in? How long's master's and do I need a PhD? Can you take one of those, answer each?
Yes, of course. So you have to get your bachelor's degree. You can pretty much get your bachelor's degree I got my bachelor's in sociology. It did not have to be psychology. And then when I applied to graduate schools, and then you have to go to graduate school, which is a 2-year program all year round. You maybe get like 2 weeks off. So it's a 2-year program. But then when you get out, you have to do 3,000 clinical hours, which takes 3 years. So let's say, like myself, I got my bachelor's in sociology. So when I applied to graduate school, they said, well, there's 3 core classes you still need to take since you didn't have your bachelor's in psychology. And I said, okay. So I took those. Then I had to have the 2 years of graduate school. Then I had to get 3,000 clinical hours, which takes about 3 years. If you're going full time, it just depends, 2 to 3 years. Then you have to take, in the state of California, each state is different. So the state of California, you have to take 2 state board exams. So that takes anywhere from 9 months to a year to do that, because you have to study for one exam, then you have to study for the next exam. So I use my ADHD to my benefit because I don't think things through all the time. Had I known, like your students asking how long, I never asked that question. I just said, sign me up, I'm in. And, I think it's worth it. I really do. You don't need a PhD. If you want a PhD and that's something that you really want, you can get one. There's just nothing that I can't do because I'm licensed that a PhD can do. You know, so in there, that's the similarities. If I wanted to go to school for another 3 years, I could have got my PhD at the same time, but that didn't interest me. Now, years later, I had to go back and become board certified behavioral analyst. So that took another 2 years anyway, but that's okay.
So Lori, just to summarize, 4-year bachelor, 2-year grad school.
Yes.
And then 3 years approximately for clinical hours.
And then another year to study and take your two board, you know, state board exams, depending on the state you're in. Yours might be different than ours. Your state may only require 1,000 clinical hours, and that would be great because then it would only take a year to get those clinical hours. And during that time, what I would suggest to your students, do an internship at different places, because the key to this job is finding a niche that you're good at. I never even imagined I would be working with individuals with developmental disabilities. And that's what I do, and I excel at it. Now, not all of my clients have developmental disabilities, but there's that niche that everybody has. And to become passionate about what modality of therapy you're going to use, because there are different modalities out there. And if you feel strongly about it and passionate about it, then you're going to be good at it.
Thank you for that help. You know, that really helps us paint a timeline if somebody wants to be in this career. I appreciate you going through that. Now, another question that was brought up is, what's the difference between a psychotherapist and just a regular therapist?
That's a good question as well. So people can call themselves something. Whether or not it's ethical and legal, or it's another story. So, for example, a behavioral analyst. Somebody cannot call themselves a behavioral analyst unless they become board certified. A psychotherapist, you can't call yourself a psychotherapist unless you're licensed from the Board of Behavioral Sciences, which gives the licenses out. So what people can do is they can call themselves a coach. They can call themselves a specialist. But if you call yourself a therapist, you have to look in your state and be very careful of what each state's clarifications are on how you use that title. Because if you misrepresent yourself, somebody will turn you in. And it's just not ethical. And most of the times, I think people don't realize, and they just say, I'm going to make cards and call myself a therapist, not really thinking about what the ramifications can be. And then there is going to be somebody out there that's going to turn your name in, and then you'll get a call and they'll just say, stop that. You have to take this off of your website. You have to take it off your cards. You can't print any papers with that. So I would say call your state and find out.
Gotcha. And somebody else asked a question. They said, is there a difference between a counselor and a therapist?
So they're school counselors. They're very good questions. A school counselor, you can get a different degree. Now, I have a master's in counseling, but I chose to go the psychotherapy part. So there's a fork in the road where you have to decide, are you going to be a counselor? Typically, the school counselors, at least in California, they don't really counsel kids. I think that stopped in 1973. There was a proposition that came about. So what they do is they give tests. That's what they do. They do psychological or neuropsych tests to see if they have a learning disability, to see what the problem is. So normally in the state of California, the counselors here, they typically give tests.
Gotcha.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry to cut you off.
It's okay. And I think each state has their own guidelines on what you can use. And that's why I would be very careful.
Appreciate that. That's great advice. Now, where can people find you at? So let's say somebody is interested in, do you have social media, or maybe there might be even somebody that needs your services or in certain areas. Where do they get in touch with you?
Well, it's interesting, Zach, because, you know, I just published this book in April. And since I published my book, I've had people from different states reaching out to me. And I'm now doing therapy, Zoom or whatever you want to call it, telehealth. Some of them don't even want to do that. I have a lot of older clients now that are in their 70s. And they're reaching out to me for the first time to see a therapist. Well, we're not, you know, work with a therapist. But it's interesting. So I am on social media. Lori Singer Behavioral Services or yournotcrazybook.com. And I answer emails. I have a section on my website where you can reach out to me, and I'm more than happy to send emails, answer questions. That's how I've been getting my clients out of state.
Awesome. That's awesome. And now tell us more about your book. So, you know, I know you're really excited. You got this new book out. What's it about? And let's say somebody's listening to this and they really need a behavior change or they're interested in your book. Tell us more about it and then where can they get it?
Okay. I think, well, my book is, I think some of your students would really like it because I have actual case studies in there as well. So the book is You're Not Crazy, Living with Anxiety, Obsessions, and Fetishes. And you can just imagine the different cases that I get. So I picked six different cases, you know, agoraphobia, social anxiety, different fetishes, OCD, obsessive compulsive behavior. And each case is a real case that I work with, but the names have been changed. It talks about the history and then what it would look like when you come into my office, what that first visit looks like. And it also has the treatment plans that I actually use in session. Each person that comes to see me, Zach, I write an individualized behavior treatment plan for them. And they take that binder with them. I make them accountable for practicing. They come back. We brainstorm other ideas. So in the book, you'll see examples of the behavioral plans in the book. But then also there's a workbook in the back. So if you wanted to use this on yourself, there's data collection sheets in there. There is how to write a motivational story in the book. There's the visuals that I use in my practice in the book. So it's almost like if you don't want to see me, or if you can't come and see me, or if you think that you can do this on your own, really, that's what it was about. Somebody wants to do this on their own, take it. This has worked for so many people. I wanted to help more people.
Awesome. I think it's a great resource. Where can people find it? Is it on your website?
It's on my website. Yes. It's on Amazon. It's on my website, Barnes and Nobles. I don't know if they have that out there, but
gotcha.
They can find it. They can order it through my website.
Well, Lori, thank you so much for coming on, giving some of your time. You know, we really appreciate it. The Career Library sessions have been very popular, and I think this is going to help a lot of folks narrow down their career and see if it's something that they might be interested in. So we know you're a busy professional, so thank you so much for coming on.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for having me.
And guys, we'll put those into the show links, Lori's web page. So if you want to connect with her or you're interested in learning her book, you can find it right there in the link. So guys, thank you so much for out there listening. Until then, this is the Zach Ballinger Show.